Well, it's good to be back home after a 2.5-week jaunt across England and Scotland, first with the Compline Choir in Canterbury, and then north to join a pilgrimage group from South Carolina in Scotland, from the Iona Island on the west coast all the way to the east coast and Northumbria section of England, where so many Christian sites share the stories of our forebears in faith even today. I was there doing recon for a similar pilgrimage for next year, and we'll have more to say about that in the coming weeks as that trip next year takes shape. But today, I want to share a brief story of an encounter that Kathy and I had on the island of Lindisfarne in northeastern England, where in the year 635, St. Aidan and 12 Celtic monks made their way to Lindisfarne from Iona to establish a Christian community there, the first one of what has now been a consecutive and consistent one since. The island of Lindisfarne can only be accessed at low tide across a causeway that is underwater much of the time, tethered by the moon's orbiting weight. No ferries or bridges will get you there, and there is a keen sense once on the island that you are standing outside any sense of normal time. Indeed, Lindisfarne is known in the region as the Holy Island. After our group celebrated the Eucharist in the 12th century church that still stands, Kathy and I made our way through the ruins of the monastery that stood there long ago. We walked the beach and watched the birds, and then ambled through the small village that 140 year-round residents still call home. Everyone other than those 140 are at the mercy of the tidal rhythms to get on and off the island. And we still had a few hours before we could get back off the island, so we're told by a local to go visit a coffee shop in the village on the island called Pilgrim's Cafe. Aptly named because it was chock full of pilgrims waiting to get off the island as well. Several in the queue to take their orders, several more at their tables and seats around. We were in line, having ordered, waiting for Kathy's coffee to be delivered at the end of the counter, and next to us was a father and his daughter, who was probably about 5, as they waited for their order to be served as well. The father turned his attention away to something else, and when he did, that girl waiting, 5-year-old, had their chocolate brownie placed on the platter, right on the counter at eye level for her. Her eyes got big, and then closed, and then she breathed in a deep breath through her nose. "That is lovely." She was fully present in the moment. And even though there's just some playful good cheer about remembering that, that experience of us witnessing her do that and sharing it with one another became an iconic part of our pilgrimage experience, because she gave us the gift of what it means to practice wakefulness, to practice presence, using all 5 of our senses in an effort to enjoin the world around us and to discover the hand of God at work in our midst. That's the work of pilgrimage. Pilgrimage is designed to invite us to stand outside the norms of everyday life and be vigilant for God. Now, the truth is, you know, I know that God is always present, but I can tell you in my life, in the midst of the busyness of my life, my senses get dulled to that divine presence. And pilgrimage invites us, cajoles us even, out of the doldrums of quotidian life, or to step off that frenetic wheel of harried existence and experience life as it was intended by our Creator, to be full in with it in the moment, to be awake, to be alive, and to be keen of all the connections across time and space that are always lurking around us in every moment. It's different that way, pilgrimage is, than vacation. Vacation is purposeful in its recreational tilt, but it is not pilgrimage. Nor is the mountaintop experience for most of us, as wonderfully as inspiring as it may be, and it may invoke a presence of God, a sense of God's presence in the moment, but one must always descend the mountain. And then what? Then what is the question of pilgrimage? Pilgrimage is not escape. It is designed to reshape life upon returning to normalcy, such that it is no longer ever going to be normal again, if that means returning to the desensitized business of life. This is why Christians through the centuries have claimed pilgrimage as a spiritual practice worthy of our embrace, to step away and hone our senses for a time against the whetstone of wakefulness, so that life back home is changed or transformed. Now, I belabor that point with you this morning because, well, here's the truth. I was scheduled to preach, and this pilgrimage is large in my mind this week as I engage the scriptures that we've all just heard read. As I contemplated the sermon to preach this morning in the place that I call home, among the people with whom I choose to live day by day and for whom I care deeply, this notion of pilgrimage kept speaking to me, especially in that passage from Luke's gospel. Now, this passage, it's one of the more challenging ones. It's tough, but it's really at its heart challenging us to consider a transformed way of being in the world. The translation may stop us short because it speaks of hating one's family, hating even life itself, releasing our grasp on all possessions. To be a disciple requires something different, something that upends the normalcy of life. But it's important here, friends, to understand that the word translated as hate in this passage carries little of the emotional energy we attribute to that word in the modern lexicon. I hate you. That's not this. This is the ancient verb describing a de-emphasis or turning from one thing to allow it to be less important in our lives so that another thing can be emphasized, another can be more important in our lives. It calls for detachment and reorientation. That's this verb. And Jesus is inviting us to calculate, to measure, to take stock of what we deem most important in our lives. But even more than that, Jesus is inviting us to consider how those wonderfully good things in life can become idols for us. Those things to which we orient preferentially, even at the expense of the relationship with God. Now, there is no evidence that Jesus hated his mother Mary, if by that we mean he despised her, or he refused to have a relationship with her. No, there's ample evidence that they remain connected, but not fused. Mary was at the foot of the cross as her son lay dying, hung dying, and he had his chief concern for her well-being from the cross, charging his friend and disciple John to care for her as if she were his own mother. So the invitation here in this passage is not a demand to jettison your family to some scrapyard of neglect. It is about ordering one's life to ensure that family and possessions and wealth and education And whatever else we see as good in this life, that we see them as worldly attachments that may lend meaning, surely we can give thanks to God for them. They may even help us experience the presence of God over and over again, but they must not become God for us. And Jesus says, unless you hate those gods, you cannot be my disciple. This life of discipleship will not work for you. Which means this life of discipleship is hard work, folks. Not for the faint of heart. It is so much easier to hold fast to that which can be just held onto or possessed. But in the end, those misplaced devotions will surely slip through our fingers, and we will find ourselves grasping at the air around us for a more steadfast lifeline. And there is so much more to life. And Jesus is saying, follow him into that life where God is God, and family is family, and possessions are possessions, each noun with a right, good, and joyful verb to go with it, and the ordering of our affiliations trues up with the syntax of abundant life which Jesus invites us into. You need not go to Scotland to figure this out, to make this turn into the truth. The invitation is right under your nose, waiting for you to experience God as God while you hold everything else lightly as you make your way through this pilgrimage we call the Christian way and life. And friends, we make it on this island home we call Earth. Amen.